Welcome to the Retirement Risk Show, the best retirement interviews and advice with Dave Hall. Learn strategies to help you reduce and even eliminate the risks facing your retirement.
Hello, welcome to the show. My name is Dave Hall. I am your host. Here we are back again talking about all the things that you can do to get yourself safely through retirement. If you'd like to learn more about what we can do to help you in that journey, go to my website, retirementriskadvisors.com. Here you'll be able to get access to all the education tools we have, the resources we have available, as well as my calendar. Today, we're going to be talking about longevity risks. To help me with that, I brought in my partner and good friend, Brian Britt. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hello, Dave. Always great to see you and be here to talk about these exciting topics and not only how we can help people who live just to life expectancy, but today I'm excited about this one. What do you do when somebody just blows it out of the park and they're 10, 15 years older than life expectancy? Then what? So I'm real excited about this topic. This is close to my heart.
We get this all the time when we go through planning, as well as just meeting with people in general. I have people reach out to me on a consistent basis, and as much fun as it seems to live to age 100 and be able to continue to do all the fun things that we get to do in life, sometimes when it comes down to a reality standpoint from a financial end, that's not always something that many people are prepared for. And so hopefully today we can address some of those concerns and issues as we go through that process, because there are many people out there that are going to live much longer than expected. We also have a situation based upon technology and medicine and all the great things that we have available where we are living longer than our parents and grandparents and those that came before us. So as you look at in your planning, Brian, this is something that I know for myself is an area that I spend a lot of time focusing on. But what are some of your thoughts in helping people address this today so they don't get to age 90, 95 and be at a point that they're really struggling to pay the bills and handle their finances the way they need to?
So I think there's two parts to that answer. The first one is I think there's an awakening going on in the world right now, probably just because of the massive free sharing of information, right? So hopefully, as humans, we get the best in class of all the advice out there, right? And I think a lot of people are realizing that there are new ways to really extend life, not just the age, but the quality, right? Because none of us want to be 100 and, you know, be in a convalescent type state or needing 24/7 care. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of people out there that don't believe they'll even make it to life expectancy. So it's interesting as we meet with clients to hear both sides of the equation, right? And you and I, one thing we always do when we're having our exploratory meetings and trying to really understand what a client's looking for before we build the blueprint is what kind of history do they have within their families of longevity? And a lot of people, until you start asking those questions, they don't realize that they have a very high chance of living longer than life expectancy. So I think the first thing when it comes to planning is to really take a look at family longevity. And I always say mom, dad, grandma, grandpa on both sides. That's good. You don't need to tell me about great Uncle George or, you know, second Aunt Mary. You just need to say mom, dad, both sides, and then, I mean, grandma, grandpa on both sides. And that usually gives you a pretty good feel of genetically what you're disposed to as far as longevity goes. When it comes to planning, obviously the key to being able to never be poor, right? Most of our clients don't necessarily want to be rich. They just want to never be poor, right? And one of the keys to never being poor is never being without an income. So the reason we're not poor while we're working is because we have income. Well, when we get into retirement, we trade that income for basically taking withdrawals from this big pile of money that we have accumulated. And that is usually not enough in my experience for most people. Most people, if that's their plan, most people get to a point where if they're going to get to 100 years old, they're going to run out of money. So what we try to do is, number one, minimize the amount of taxes that they're going to pay in their lifetime. People don't realize how big of a difference that can make. And, you know, I know you teach this in your class, but that 7-year rule, basically, if you can eliminate taxes on Social Security, you can add about 7 years to the total longevity of your entire estate that you're living off of. That's an amazing number to me. Now, we can't always do that, right? We have people with pensions. We have people with rental income. We have people whose standard deductions are going to get eaten up by other stuff, and they're going to pay tax on 85% of their Social Security. But that's just one example of a strategy that if we can minimize or even eliminate taxes on Social Security, I mean, in reality, it's 5 to 7 years more time on that money. So, you know, I think really the key is just to A, figure out how long you think you're really going to live, and then B, regardless of what you think your longevity is, see if you can build a plan that will work to 100. And I always tell people, and they go, oh my God, I'm never going to be around till 100. And I said, well, then your kids and your charitable organizations will thank me because you're going to have a lot of money left over, right? But rather than planning on your death, we'd rather plan on your life, right? And have it go out until, I think 100 for most people is enough. Now, I'm in the middle of reading a book right now, and the woman's 106 years old in absolutely perfect health. She has nothing wrong with her. And the woman's 106 and she's in perfect health. So again, I think just the key is a lot of it is psychological and the mentality of how you see the world, but also then just in case you're wrong and you don't die at life expectancy, let's make sure you never run out of money.
Brian, one of the things you mentioned was Social Security, and you talked more about the taxation of it, but it's obviously a program that's designed to last as long as we do, to be able to get those monthly checks year after year, decade after decade. Why can't people just rely upon that? Many people going into their late 50s, early 60s assume that that's going to be what gets them through. Why are we finding that not to be the case?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So if I remember correctly, when Social Security was designed in the 1930s, the average person, or I should say married couple, had a life expectancy of like 58, right? And I believe at that point, correct me if I'm wrong, in the 1930s, you couldn't even take Social Security till you were 65, right? So that's the greatest investment on the government's part ever. Collect all this tax for Social Security, right? And then people are supposed to be, you know, going to use it. And the government says nobody's going to use it. And so it was really only designed for people who lived too long. So as far as now today, I think Social Security is at best a supplemental program to supplement the cost of living, the cost of medical expenses, the cost of food, fuel, housing. It's just not enough to live even a modest lifestyle. I mean, if you want to live on the poverty line, you probably could pull it off on your Social Security, but it was never designed to do that. It was really just designed for a small percentage of people who live too long, and it just doesn't keep up with the cost of actual living. So I think that's the reason we can't just depend on it. But we love it as a supplemental. We love it, you know, and I'm a big fan of Social Security, but not as your main strategy.
A little more history here. If you do go back to those days, you were paying 1% on the first $3,000 of earnings. So not a big check. It'd be nice to only pay that much still. But as we transitioned into an expensive retirement program, obviously the contributions need to go up. But as you look at it, Brian, I appreciate what you're saying from a supplemental side. I talk about Medicare all the time, and we always talk about the importance of getting supplemental insurance to cover all the gaps that Medicare doesn't have, but using Medicare as your primary insurance. And here we're really flipping it, saying what we've got to have is our own savings, our own investments, all the things that we need to do ourselves. And then Social Security is the supplement, because that's what it really is. For most people, it's not even going to cover half of your living costs during retirement. Going to be somewhere between 30 and 40%. Now, if you're a low income person and you're saying that I didn't put much into the program and I'm not living a very high lifestyle, yeah, maybe 80 or 90%. And if you have no other assets, I guess it becomes 100% of your lifestyle. But that definitely is not what it was intended to be.
You know, if we compare today to yesteryear, right? Old school to new school, as we teach in the classes, right? The old school was, again, Social Security was simply a supplement. But if you think back of what the basis, what the foundation of most people's existence in retirement was, it was a pension, right? You think about that. That was most people worked for an organization for a long period of time. And as a reward, they were guaranteed they would never be poor, right? And then you supplemented that pension with Social Security. As far as investments go, like stocks and bonds and mutual funds, before like the 1960s, a very, very small percentage of people had any money in the stock, bond, mutual fund world. And again, they would retire. They'd have a pension, so they knew they'd never be poor out on the street. They'd have Social Security to supplement the pension. And then maybe in a small percentage of cases, they'd have an investment portfolio. So I wanted to mention the pension for a reason. Today, we're in a situation where almost no one has a pension. And basically, in the 1970s and then really in the early 1980s, there was a massive shift where corporations transferred the risk of their employees never being poor from the pension to the employee itself or themselves, right? So you went from having a professional pension manager taking care of this big pool of money for your company and to make sure that when you retired, there was enough money there to make sure that you would not run out of money no matter how long you lived. Well, all of a sudden they came out with things like 401ks and 403bs and 457 plans. All of those plans were transferring the risk of you never running out of money to you. And that, when you think about it, has got to be one of the craziest things, experiments that was ever done. My son is a pilot. He's a student pilot. He's only 17 years old. And I always think about him and I say, you know, imagine if you got on a flight and the captain basically got on the radio there on the PA system and said, hey, welcome aboard. I just want to let you know, I'm going to have one of you guys fly the plane today. And basically, I'm going to go get some coffee and good luck on the landing, right? Well, why would you ever do that? Well, that's exactly what we did to all of those employees that had a professional money manager who was taking care of their pension in the company, all of a sudden say, you manage the money. You figure out which mutual funds you want to buy. You figure out the mix between stocks and bonds. And hopefully you'll have enough money when you retire. And then when you retire, by the way, you figure out the distribution schedule of how much you're going to take every year to make sure you never run out of money. Obviously, this is a major problem.
Yeah, and Americans have done a really bad job of keeping up with the responsibilities. Think back of your flying situation. They could even leave the manual of the how to run the airplane in the cockpit with you. You're still not going to figure it out. There's so many things you've got to understand, so many things that you need to know, and that happens with retirement. We have a lot of information out there. There are now a lot of resources, but if you don't have someone there to push the discipline, to make sure you're staying true to investment strategies you should be using, it's proving to not work out so well for the American people. And as a result, we've got less saved for retirement now than we've ever had. We've got more people going into retirement with problems from a financial standpoint than we've ever had. And we're going to continue to see the impact of that.
You know, you just reminded me of something. And you know, not to toot our own horns as financial planners and fiduciaries, but there was a study that was done, and I was at a money management conference last week up in Irvine, California, and they stated the study that showed people over, I think it was a 25 or 30 year period, who managed their own assets versus people who had professionals helping them manage those assets. And over time, the return was twice as high for the people that had advisors. Or another way to say it is, without any help and advising, without a plan, without anyone sitting there making sure you're doing everything that you're supposed to be doing, you're going to get half the return that you would if you went and hired an advisor. And by the way, that study was after the average advisory fees of whatever they were. These were money management fees, right? So I know a lot of the stuff we do is no load, but on the money management side, where there is that 1%, 1.5%, 1.25%. Even after that, they were twice as better off than if they charted on their own. And again, it sounds like we're, you know, selling financial advising services, but those are the numbers. That's the actual study.
But this last year is a prime example. If you look at what happened, there were so many people saying the market was going to crash. You need to get out. Don't have your money in there. It's going to be the worst crash we're ever going to see. And then the S&P 500 goes up 25%. So if you were one who got out, now you've missed that. And now you're trying to figure out, how do I even get back in? And unfortunately for many people, what they're going to do is time it wrong again on the re-entry. and then have issues where they miss the upside and maybe take more of the downside or stay out of the market and get nothing. So you really start seeing this because emotions get involved and people start looking at what others are saying versus what the market should be doing over a long period of time.
Absolutely. I think something else to consider as well, in 2022, now there was an interesting year, right? You had a record number of interest rate increases from the Fed, and it basically crushed the market. But here's what's interesting. A lot of people who try to do this on their own, they believe it's all about the balance between stocks and bonds. And in reality, the S&P in 2022 was down 20-something percent. But what's more interesting is U.S. government treasury bonds were down 30%. So imagine you had $1 million in U.S. government guaranteed treasury bonds and you thought, I'm rock solid. I don't need advice. I got the federal government backing me up. Well, by the end of the year, your $1 million account was 700 grand. Now, granted, if you would have held on to those bonds for 10 years, then they would have made good on their promise and said, here's your $1 million back. And whatever the interest rate that you were collecting from us over the last 10 years, that's yours to keep. But the bottom line is, a lot of these little subtleties, people don't realize until it happens. And they go, I have this beautiful balanced portfolio with these great mutual funds that I looked up and that I'm managing on my own. And how could I be down 30% across the board where most of my money was in bonds? That's why. So a lot of what we do is really just, I always say, help people avoid the landmines that we know are buried there because we've been there. I started doing this in 1986, so I think I've probably either stepped on or watched other people step on every landmine there could be. So it's really just a matter of bringing that to the table for someone rather than saying, oh, you know, you don't know how to manage your own money. Hey, we see a lot of people, especially CPAs, they do a pretty decent job and everything's fine until it's not, right? And that's the key. So hopefully as planners, even with people that manage their own assets, we can help them maybe avoid some of those landmines and just give them a lot more protection than they realized they needed because they thought, I'm doing great. And all of a sudden they're in retirement and they're going, how could this be that I'm now this, you know, in this position? So hopefully we can do that for people who want to manage it on their own, which is totally fine. And people who don't, obviously we have the ability to take a lot of those responsibilities and take them on and make sure we do a good job at them.
Something I dealt with, and we're seeing many others go through the process as well, is the issues once you start having bad health. When I had my kidney failure, it created havoc on what I'd scheduled for my retirement. I had a lot of businesses that required my time and became the uncertainty of if something happened to me, how was my wife going to get the value out of those? And that's another thing that we continually see even this in the CPA world. Many times we're the ones doing the planning. In fact, I'm the one who handles all of our finances. My wife, in fact, the other day I made a comment that someone was making a payment on a business that they'd purchased years ago. And she goes, oh, we're still getting money off of that? She had no idea that that payment was coming in. It was a decent sized payment because it was something I'd sold to help pay for some other things that I was doing, which was the goal all along, is to have these businesses to do that. Well, for her to wake up one morning and have no idea what's going on because I handle that, that's a pretty scary thought for a spouse and for you to put them in there. So one of the things we're doing is just making sure you've got trusted advisors. People that are in our office are going to be around a lot longer than even Brian or I, and we hope to live a long time and keep doing this because we love it, but to make sure there's someone there to hold the hand as you go through a very trying time of a spouse passing and now someone else has to pick up all those pieces.
You know, I think CPAs can really relate to this, but I'll just tell a quick story. So I've had the same CPA since I'm 19 years old out of New York City. It's where I was born and raised. And I left that person for about 10 years. When I left Merrill Lynch and I started a financial planning asset management company, and the attorney that helped me set up all the structures also had tax advice. I was letting him do my taxes for the corporation as well as the personal individual stuff. And of course, he established the corporations for me and did everything I needed to do. Well, long story short, after about 3 years, he started focusing most of his time on tax law, dealing with the IRS and different stuff. And he brought in another tax preparing person who I really just never connected with. And, you know, for 6 or 7 years, I just kind of went along, but never connected with it. And I really just felt like the relationship that I had left behind from my CPA from when I was younger was really someone that if I were to die and my kids or my wife needed to make a phone call, I would want them to call that person. So after 10 years of not being with my original CPA, I got rid of the company I was with. I called him up. He took me back with open arms. You know, it was like the return of the prodigal son. And he was like, oh my God, I'm so glad you're coming back. It was great. It was great. And now I'm in a position where my kids know him anyway. And if something were to happen to me, they're going to pick up the phone and call him. And just to have that, it's worth every penny. Plus, of course, he gives me great advice, you know, on a regular basis, but it's just worth it to have that team that's not you, right? Because if you're gone, got to have somebody that can be there to hold the hand of our families and loved ones.
Absolutely. Brian, our time is gone. One of the things that we were hoping to get to today was annuities and talk about those, because they are a way to solve the longevity risk issue, because you can set them up to get payments for life. Or even if you're someone that's using a total return based planning, to have annuities that are guaranteed to never go backwards, that are growth products that you can use to hedge against the down years. They can be great solutions, but we're going to have to save that for another day. We'll come back. We'll talk about that the next show. Any parting comments you have, Brian?
Well, since our next show is going to be about annuities, I'm going to leave everybody with one thought just to ponder until next week. If you worked for a corporation and you retired years ago and you got that lifetime payment from the corporation, I'm going to tell you a little secret. Chances are slim to none that that corporation was paying you that check every month for the rest of your life. What that corporation did is they took money out of their pension fund, they called up their life insurance companies that they used, and they found the company that was going to give them the best deal, where they would give them a lump sum of money, and then they would let that company do what they do. Insurance companies are in the business of making sure you don't run out of money while you're still alive. IBM and AT&T and Apple Computer, they're not in business of figuring out that equation. So we are, as planners, we do the same thing. We just don't need a corporation to do it. We can actually take assets, give them to an insurance company, and figure out exactly how much we're going to get paid for the rest of our lives, or at least a minimum amount we're going to get paid. Hopefully it's better than that. So most people don't realize that. You're getting that monthly check from some corporation on their actual corporate check. It's not coming from them. It's coming most likely from an insurance company. So we'll talk more about that next time.
One of the great things too is we have the ability to go to the market, which we'll talk more about as well, and what that looks like compared to a big company saddling up with one insurance company that may be great, but it may not be so well. So we'll talk about that as well next time. Brian, great to have you. Listeners, great to have you with us as well. Look forward to seeing each of you again next week, where we'll talk further about annuities and some of these other things that we need to know to help get us through retirement.
Hey, if you liked what you heard and you want more retirement risk education, or you're interested in signing up for any of our many retirement-focused webinars, make sure you check out our website at retirementriskadvisors.com. We have a lot of great resources, tools, and information on retirement available to you right at your fingertips. And if you're on social media, you can find us at Retirement Risk Advisors on Instagram and Facebook. This brings us to the end of another episode of the Retirement Risk Show with our host and retirement risk expert, Dave Hall. We here at RRA don't just get you to retirement, we get you safely through retirement. Thanks again for listening, and we will be back with you again soon. Investment advisory services offered through Brookstone Wealth Advisors, LLC, BWA, a registered investment advisor and an affiliate of Brookstone Capital Management, LLC. BWA and Retirement Risk Advisors are independent of each other. Insurance products and services are not offered through BWA, but are offered and sold through individually licensed and appointed agents. The opinions expressed by Dave Hall and guests on the show are their own and do not reflect the opinions of this radio station. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Past performance cannot be used as an indicator to determine future results. Any strategies mentioned may not be suitable for everyone. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on any information mentioned, please consult with a qualified tax or investment advisor to determine if it is suitable for your specific situation. This program is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with regard to the subject covered. Registered investment advisors and investment advisor representatives act as fiduciaries for all of our investment management clients. We have an obligation to act in the best interests of our clients and to make full disclosure of any conflicts of interest, if any exist. Please Please refer to our firm brochure, the ADV 2A, Item 4, for additional information. Dave Hall and Retirement Risk Advisors are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency.